Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the elephant in the room, or at least over the past several episodes, we've been talking about what needs to happen if we're going to get the Republican Party to actually be the party capable of saving our constitutional republic. Because bottom line, if you keep on just voting the Republican establishment and the crap that they're shoving down our throats, then it's over. It's over, because if you look at Congress, Congress is corrupt because we're not holding people accountable to the Constitution. It's pretty simple. We have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. My little article is becoming a mini book regarding the 14th Amendment, because there's a lot of fallacies out there, and there's a lot of people that, and unfortunately, there are conservatives that, you know, they despise the 14th Amendment. Why? I mean, the 14th Amendment protects individual privileges and immunities. It doesn't force unconstitutional government. It applies the same constitutional protections that we're supposed to have from the federal government, from the states as well. The problem is the federal government is violating those very specific privileges and immunities, such as our right to worship. They shall pass no law respecting religious expression. And they are. They're constantly telling you, you can't talk about Christianity. You can't pray. Those are laws regarding the expression of religion. So what the heck does that mean? Why is it that the Bill of Rights is very clear? The federal government should pass no laws respecting the expression of religion or religious expression. And they are. So I understand why people are, you know, maybe somewhat reserved, but maybe they just don't understand the Constitution. I'll give them that pass. Because when you understand the background of the 14th Amendment, in the states, because the Bill of Rights was never applied to the states, states had the ability to actually discriminate against the freemen, and they did. They made it impossible for them to buy property, for them to have guns. They made it impossible for them to have to obtain equality within the political class. It became a real problem. Now, remember, this whole thing could have been handled and been resolved more than a half century before in the Constitutional Convention. And I'm covering this. I'm putting this in there. It was George Mason that indicted the three Southern states, because at that point in time, there were only three Southern states that were not willing to give up slavery. And I will tell you what they are. They are the Carolinas and Georgia. Now, we've moved a long way since then. And as a matter of fact, I believe that those are, there is still prejudices, and there will always be prejudices. And unfortunately, I can honestly understand. I get and understand why when people sees somebody that's different from them, you know, their skin, their hair, their eyes, whatever differentiator there is. I mean, there may be a green eye, blue eye, pink eye type of bias or prejudice out there. But I have a real hard time understanding why we have such hate and animosity amongst the Christians for different Christian sects and so forth. You know, I understand that there are, you know, in other words, we're basically, because somebody has been brought up in a, let's say, Catholicism. Somebody's been brought up in Catholicism. And so because you view Catholicism as evil or what have you, you just hate all Catholics. They're all the problem. No, you shouldn't be. We should not. We should be able to set aside our differences from the individuals, because the individuals do not make that religion. Now, unless that individual happens to be the pontiff, but I think you understand the meaning here. I can understand why physical differences, people who wear glasses, I happen to be, if you haven't noticed, I happen to be one that wears glasses. And I can tell you that there's, you know, I feel like I'm discriminated against. And I'm kind of being funny, but not. Or what about those people that are short? You know, the physical characteristics and differences between being short and being tall. Have you ever been, if you're not that tall, have you ever been to a concert that's standing up? It's general admission, everybody's standing up, and you can't see because you're short. So you need to get somebody to lift you up on their shoulders. Then other people get all upset. Hey, anyway, we find ways to divide ourselves. So in a way, I'm not giving it a pass. In a way, I can understand physical characteristics that cause, you know, division and cause prejudices. I don't excuse it, but I can understand it. But I really have a problem when we're talking about the different Christian faiths, or even, I'll just call them the passive faiths. If you look at the Jewish faith, if you look at the Hindu, Christianity, all the different forms of Christianity out there, they're having Christian churches that have been arisen that, you know, embraced homosexuality back in the 80s. They took certain segments out of the scriptures and threw the rest away and said, hey, we love thy brother. We believe that that embraces homosexuality or whatever. However, they was able to get from point A to point B. But the fact of the matter is that at least they're not anybody that is Christian and they want to take away your liberty. I have, you know, they're not ones that actually embrace the principles of Christianity, because the principles of Christianity, I believe the principles of Judaism, Hinduism, and those churches or religions and faith that actually, you know, allow people to make their own choices. You know, Mohammedans, you either convert or die. I mean, that's their doctrine. So I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that existing in America. This is the land of liberty, not the land of compulsion. And until, to be honest with you, until there's an honest dialogue about those very specific doctrines, and there's no way, I've never met a Mohammedan, whether they be a public leader or, you know, a hardcore practicing, but not in leadership. I've never met one that's willing to actually tear the Hadith and the Quran up to say these things are not, you know, sound principles. They're not willing to make those types of challenges to say we're willing to get along with everybody. So if they require convert and die, then they need to be contained within their own country instead of migrating into countries of liberty and then in a parasitical way. And that's the best way to put it. In a parasitical way, they, you know, they envelop themselves and they slowly grow and grow until they take over. This is precisely what's happening in Europe. And the Europeans are being told, you know, by 2030 or by 2040, we're going to take over and you will be forced into either slavery or you will convert. Well, apparently liberty is no longer a principle that's important in Europe because the Europeans are willing to turn their backs on it. But my point regarding the 14th Amendment, I have a real problem when I talk to conservatives that are fighting, oh, that's an unconstitutional amendment. Actually, if you look at it, I believe that the essence of the 14th Amendment was one of those things that the divine hand of providence prevailed in trying to get this country going in the right direction so that the states could no longer deprive its citizens of the precious privileges and immunities that are guaranteed by the Constitution. Your right to assemble, your right to religious expression, your right to vote. Now, if you've ever read my material, I am not an advocate that everybody gets a chance to vote in everything. I believe everybody should have a chance to vote in their representative. I do not believe everybody should be able to vote on every issue. If you don't own land, you should not be able to participate in voting on taxes on land, you know, bonds, what have you. I mean, you have to have skin in the game. And when you look at it, I mean, seriously, when you look at corporations, corporations have got this right a long, long time ago. I mean, if you have stocks in the New York Stock Exchange, you don't get to vote in every corporation and its governance. You can only vote in the corporations that you have stock in. So why is it that we allow voters to be able to use their votes as a weapon against those? And I say this because this is how we've gotten into the cycle of democracy. This is one of the mechanisms that has forced us into Tytler's cycle of democracy, that after 200 years, democracies fail and they collapse because the people learn that they can access the public purse. Now, to be honest, our framers actually protected us because they created an enumerated constitution. If it's not in the constitution, they can't use the public purse to do it. But the problem is that that thing was lost because of Supreme Court rulings and other malicious and nefarious politicians, bureaucrats, lawyers, and so forth over the past two centuries have been whacking and beating our and shredding our constitution. And so, as you can tell, I'm still in a monologue. And so when we come back, I'll try to wrap this up on the things that we've been talking about. And I'm hoping to get into some of the really key issues regarding some need to know news, COVID, and so forth. And things that I want you to ponder. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
As I was saying, and I guess I really didn't, and I need to finish this because I want you to understand that those who are against the 14th Amendment, and if it's you, I want you to really think about, because if you think that it was, it was wrongly passed or what have you, I want you to understand that what was going on with the Civil War, it wasn't about state rights. I mean, if you support getting an appealing and rejecting the 14th Amendment, then you basically don't believe that we should have this declaration of jurisdiction, that nobody becomes a citizen unless they are under the jurisdiction of the United States. So in other words, their parents have to be under the jurisdiction of the United States. It is very clear that illegal aliens do not become citizens if their children are born here and their children are not citizens. It has nothing to do whether they're born in the United States. That was an evil usurpation by the courts and a bad, an undermining opinion. When you read how they defined it, the intent was to allow all of the new freemen who were born into slavery, who were here under slavery and the terms of slavery in America, they became freemen and they became citizens. So it intent, and unfortunately, there was still the wrong spirit in Congress regarding the Native Americans, the Indians, because they still excluded them when they should have said, you know what, Indians are included as well. If your heritage is here, we, you know, and maybe the one change to the 14th Amendment should be, you know, the clarity that if you come here and you're not under the jurisdiction, your children do not become citizens. That clarity probably needs to be added. But when you look at all of the rest of the 14th Amendment, it is very clear. These are constraints that the states are not willing to put upon themselves in guarding the, you know, we the people, our individual privileges and immunities. And so here's the point. And this, I want to be very careful because I want to make sure that I'm not necessarily broad brushing everybody as potential racists. But I will tell you that there are racists that try to use these types of little arguments to say, oh, the 14th Amendment's a bad thing. The 14th Amendment took away state rights. I want you to understand the spirit of this and how states will quickly, especially progressive states, look at progressive states today. Progressive states want to take away your right to bear arms, like Virginia. You know, just a couple of years ago, Virginia was a dark red state, or I should say a red state, a solid red state. What the heck happened? Obama, the illegal immigration. There's a lot of things that have been happening to undermine the Constitution. This is why the only way we are going to get back to protecting and preserving liberty, individual sovereignty, and the principles of the Constitution and the rule of law in America, along with our inalienable rights, is through Republic Review. And there are different mechanisms, as I've been showing you. There is actually a mechanism within the common law grand jury where we the people have the opportunity to literally force the local governments and state governments into compliance. I'm here to tell you that when you can start removing and banning lifelong public servants who have been, you know, feeding at the public trough of lobbyists and so forth and making themselves rich at the expense of the people, when you can now bounce them out of office, just that easy. I'm serious. It's just that easy. Then, now we have an opportunity to, you know, actually drain the swamp. Is Trump draining the swamp? No. The Constitution drains the swamp. The Constitution keeps swamps from forming. It's all a facade if you truly believe that the next president is going to be the one, the only president that will actually be the one that'll drain the swamp and make America great again once and for all is the president that stands up and says, we will fully comply with the Constitution and go out to we the people into the states and speak to and educate and demand that the people go to their state, their state legislators and get rid of anybody who's not willing to stand up for compliance and getting the federal government back into compliance as well as the state governments. But you have to start at the big tree. Because when the big tree falls, it crushes everybody. And as a matter of fact, the whole world will fall when America falls. Liberty will be lost in the world if America falls. And New Zealand, Trevor Lawton, he's been very clear in saying this. And so I want you to understand, go look at the 14th Amendment. Forget about, these idiotic, imbecilic references that the 14th Amendment is unconstitutional. I challenge anybody because I've been looking at it. And the people say, well, they forced the southern states to comply to the 14th. So what? The 14 states weren't states anymore, right? Weren't they a part of the Confederacy? Didn't they create the Confederacy? Now, the North was wrong in going after them for anything other than slavery. And I'm here to tell you, and I've said this so many times before, the Monroe Doctrine was a new foreign policy. Now that we had a foreign government to the south of us, we should have waged war and basically, because at that point in time, this is where America started spending millions and millions of dollars trying to end slavery around the world. And the drive, the impetus behind this end of slavery, I want you to go look at Wikipedia and find out who these people were that wanted to apply these individuals, these civil rights to everybody in America. And who are these people that wanted to end slavery around the world? Wikipedia refers to them as the Radical Republicans. Isn't that interesting? Those were the Republicans that adhered to the Madison-Thomason principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that all people deserve equal rights. All people deserve equal rights. However, like I said, this is where it goes down to ideological religion. If you don't and you can't respect the equal rights of others, then don't even come here. Don't come. And if you're here and you want to support these radical concepts, then you should not be able to vote and your citizenship should be partial. You should be allowed some privileges of citizenship, but you should not be able to vote because people that want to subjugate other people, they will use their votes and they will use the political process and project their principles into the public spaces. And their principles do not belong here. And if they don't want to come here to embrace individual liberty and individual sovereignty, then say, you know what? Choose. Pick your place. Tell me where you want to go, but you're not taking over Dearborn, Michigan anymore. Sorry. And that's what a president and that's what the Congress should be doing is ensuring that they are protecting America and establishing the clarity of citizenship. The 14th Amendment is pretty clear on what citizenship really is. That you have to be under the jurisdiction, and people that want to become a citizen and raise their arm to the square and say, and take an oath of citizenship that they will support the Constitution, and then as soon as they turn right around, they have perjured themselves because they had no intent whatsoever to abide by that oath. So in other words, they lied. So their oaths should be canceled. They shouldn't be citizens, period. And until we, as Americans, start getting this into our brain housing group, this is why I talk about the Tory Acts. This is why I go through all of these things for you. And I'm hoping, so now's the time for me to, turn the page here and plug the next follow-on to all of this. And that follow-on is we need you to get involved. We need you to start doing all of these things. Yours truly is involved in every way possible. I believe in living by example. And I'm asking you to help, maintain the listener drive. Maintain reaching out to people that seem to have some some basic respect and love for liberty and say, hey, if you really love liberty, you really need to start listening and understanding this concept of what we need to do to preserve it. Because anybody that has watched what's going on with this COVID-19, I can't believe that this show is not the number one show right now. Because nobody, and I'm telling you, nobody, everybody's complaining about the COVID. Everybody is, you know, saying this is wrong, but nobody has the actual elixir that will end this tyranny other than Republic Review, G.R. Mobley, and, you know, these common law grand juries and everything that we're putting out, because this is spot on. We're going to have Sheriff Mack on, and I'm hoping, I have to tell you, I don't know where Sheriff Mack is going to be. I would like to see him get on board and start promoting constitutional sheriffs to assert their constitutional authority in calling and convening common law grand juries to make these declarations. We're going to have this conversation with him. I want him to tell us the background, why he got this started, and the whole intent, and see whether he really wants to preserve the Constitution or if he wants to preserve his organization. Because bottom line, you can't do both. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So before I really get into let me finish this thought before I get into reading, I think, what is the need to know news or the really hot stuff right now. And I want to actually keep this not time bound, but this concept of preserving the Constitution and preserving your organization is probably the true litmus test on defining the character of a person and organization. Now, there's a lot of good organizations that try to do good things. And so the question comes down to this. Anybody, any organization that is willing to step into obsolescence to preserve the Constitution is a patriotic organization. Any organization that takes the position that they, you know, the organization and preserving the organization comes first, in other words, preserving their income, you know, and thank God that the framers didn't have this kind of corrupt paradigm, you know, putting themselves above everybody else. They really got it. They really understood that everybody deserved an equal chance. And this is how compassion and how Christianity flourished so strongly in America. We've lost these principles, my friends. But ask, when you talk to a John Bircher and you say, what's more important, the survival of your organization or the survival of the Constitution? And if they say, oh, well, you know, because the individual will probably say, well, survival of the Constitution is far more important. Then why is it that your organization is fighting the only organization, the only process, the only person that has been the true champion for the Constitution and preserving it with the Republic Review? Why are you fighting him? That's the question. And it's the same question I'm going to have for the sheriff. I'm going to have this same question for all of the organizations. And you need to ask these questions of your sheriff. You need to ask these questions of anybody who's a part of an organization, but their responsibility as a patriot, as a citizen, should be preserving the Constitution. Do you know somebody that's involved in Western lands? Do you know somebody that's involved in tactical civics? Do you know somebody that's involved in Oath Keepers? Do you know somebody that's involved in the Tea Party? You ask these folks, and this goes down to the big shmoly, or whatever you want to call the big tamale. How about that? Ask your Republican leadership at the Republican County Central Committees. You get your butt up, you go to that Central Committee, and you say, I want to ask one question. What is more important, preserving the Constitution or preserving the Republican seats as controlled by the Republican Party? Is the party more important than the Constitution? And let them answer that question. And they will try to do the political sidestepping and dancing, because I've already given you, I believe I've given you the talking points. Then why aren't you teaching the Constitution to every member in the Central Committee and offering lessons on the Constitution throughout the county to come to these meetings so that people can learn about the Constitution? Why is it that you don't take oaths to support the Constitution as a part of the party? Why is it that you don't use Section 3 of the 14th Amendment in getting rid of people who violate their oath of office by not supporting the Constitution and supporting rebellion against it? Why is it that you don't hold people accountable when they violate basically the Constitution? Is with, I don't even care about the stupid party platform. I only care about the Constitution. Fix your platform so your platform completely aligns with the Constitution. It just sickens me to see a Republican Party platform that talks about, you know, healthcare at the federal government level and welfare. We need to have welfare. No, we need the federal government to comply. Those powers are not enumerated. They have no business meddling with it. There needs to be a clear, succinct, and concise platform that calls the federal government to the powers that have been delegated. These are the only things that they should be messing with. And the rest is left to the states. And then the state party platform, now you're free to realm into the education and the things that the state constitutionally controls. But unfortunately, there's all this illegal control going on by the federal government, by globalists and everybody else. Step up, folks. Step up. If you do not preserve liberty, your most precious property will be stolen from you. I want you to think about how the direction we're going, because are we at the Sodom and Gomorrah state yet? No, we're really not, because there are people that listen to this show. There are people that are getting on board with Republic Review. I'm working with a group that's trying to form, and we're trying to, you know, come together on what these core principles are and what this group is going to stand for. But the name of the group is called Friends of Liberty United. They've already kind of put their stake in the ground. They've kind of created their domain name and so forth. They're getting serious. And they've asked me to get in with them because they look at what I am doing as the process that I forget who said this, and I know Keith Broders tells it to me all the time, and he quotes this person, Thoreau or somebody, but he says, thousands of patriots come and take a strike at the branches of tyranny, but only one in a thousand strikes the root of tyranny. And Keith has told me humbly to myself that I'm the one that is, you know, he sees me as one of the very few that's striking at the root. He believes that Republic Review truly strikes at the root of tyranny. And I'm telling you something, my friends. It is not me. It is the good Lord that has actually given us. Everything that I am talking about is just utilizing what the Lord gave us in the Constitution and the ratification debates. He was the only one that had to have known how bad it would get and where we would be and how what the framers could not fathom, a nation actually holding millions, hundreds of millions of people in jail, incarcerated so that they could, and their only purpose in life is to give you their organs if you want them. If you're willing to spend whatever millions of dollars it takes to get a whole new fresh set of organs. How evil is that? Where people are being kept alive just so that you can take their precious organs of life so that you, you know, can live your life of debauchery. You know, people like David Crosby, who just trashed his whole body by the way he lived. And, oh, well, now we don't have any consequences because now we can get the essence of life taken from other people. We are living in a very dark and evil time. And we need to use every bit of resolve we can to take, you know, it's like the marathon. It's like getting out and running. It's like exercise. You know, I had to do it, and I can't say I had to do it because I begrudgingly did it, but I was required to do it, and it helped me learn some discipline. You know, as broken and as damaged as I am from the Marine Corps, the hardest step in running a marathon is the first step. Once you get that first step started, the second step and the next steps become easier and easier. And I am telling you, when you're standing there knowing, and here is a little bit of providence or wisdom that I'll share with you. If you've ever done a free fall, if you've ever, you know, pulled, you know, and you jumped all by yourself, not in tandem with somebody else, but if you've ever done a free fall and you come and, you know, you hit the ground for the first time, you have no idea what to expect. So the first time you get out, it is a complete fresh new experience. The interesting thing is because that ground hits you pretty hard. It's like you're jumping off of a good 6-foot fall, maybe even more than that. But I mean, it hits you and you go, wow, you don't, you know, you can get hurt actually if you're not prepared. And there's ways to lessen the impact. But the fact of the matter is that the second time you jump, you anticipate and, you know, you kind of, you know, either get hurt on your second time or, you know, you're bracing yourself a lot more. And after a while, it gets a little bit easier. But that first jump is real easy. The second jump is a little bit harder. And I'm saying this because marathon runners, the first time you ever run a marathon, the first time you actually do the 26 miles, you know, you have no idea. You've never done that until you've hit that wall. And that's a runner's world. I'm not a runner. But there's this thing called the wall. And when you hit that wall, until you've ever experienced hitting the wall, you have no idea what it's like. And everything that you do beyond hitting that wall is sheer determination. It's beyond your physical capacity. You're really just, it's determination that is keeping you going. It is not because of conditioning or anything else. Actually, all those things are important. Those do support all of this. But when you hit that wall, that's the point where you're just about ready to collapse and fall over. And because you've got your momentum and because you've got your legs and everything else, when you hit that wall, it's an experience. So that the second time you actually run and you know you're going to hit that wall, it's kind of like parachuting. You go, oh, you know, wow, I know that experience and I know I can do it, but boy, that is tough. But the point is that getting started, taking the stand. I'm not asking people to run and exert that much energy. I would love it. I would love to see Patriots exerting the type of energy that marathon athletes are exerting. That's what needs to happen. When we come back, I am going to get a little focused on what we have, some need-to-know news. And before we get into the COVID stuff, I think the most important thing, because we were talking about the 14th Amendment and individual liberty, individual sovereignty, that we're all created equal, and racism, we're going to talk about the new flavor of racism, Mississippi burning, or maybe it's Minnesota burning now. So, but we'll be right back. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic, as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so the two fundamental principles, and you've heard me say this before, two fundamental principles to American government, our Constitution, that the framers embraced, was that our government was to, its two operational, objects, the two objects of government that they created wasn't to empower them with everything, but the two objects that they were supposed to do is to preserve life and preserve property. And in doing so, you know, they were to actually preserve liberty, because as long as somebody can live to make the choices and have the property that they should have to make the choices of doing what they need to do, that is preserving their liberty. And so they created a constitution that would, one, not take life. And so they're supposed to protect us from external. The states and counties are supposed to protect us internally from bad players and so forth. And so the states are not supposed to be the ones that are supposed to be threatening our lives. Well, I know everybody's heard about George Floyd and what the heck's going on. And this is a perfect segue from going from the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment was, the intent was to ensure that every person. Again, I started off with these biases and prejudices. The 14th Amendment can't eradicate prejudices, and government can't take away thought. But government can punish people when their thought actually put into action takes away the individual privileges and immunities that are guaranteed by the Constitution. Well, George Floyd had his individual privileges and immunities denied, obviously, as you know. So that's kind of where, if... where I want to kind of give you to this paradox. It used to be the words were saying Mississippi is burning because of the Civil Rights Acts, the Civil Rights Wars and so forth, and the racism that was rampant in Mississippi. Why is it that we now see this happening in Minnesota? Well, it just takes time to travel. No. Look at the bigger picture. What is the ideology or the paradigm of Mississippi? Hey, it's become red. Mississippi is actually a state where they kind of love liberty, and they believe if you love liberty, that means that you do not take the liberty away from another person. Remember, that scale of liberty means that everybody needs to choose for themselves what to do for themselves, and not to, you know, dictate, not to take over control and suppress and oppress. Liberty means that everybody has the equal opportunity. Mississippi's got it. You know, they may have been a bad player way back in the 1800s, but they've got it now. They haven't been taken over by the new age of slavery. The Democratic Party, the progressives and the communists, that is the new age of slavery. And so how is it that Mississippi burning has now become Minnesota burning? And I just want you to understand, there's a big hypocrisy. There's a huge hypocrisy. When you allow leftists to take over government, then this is what you find. This is precisely what you find. Only when you have the understanding of compulsion and slavery, and you know that we can do these things, we can get away with these things, that life and liberty is not precious or important to support, well, then you'll find that the police departments all of a sudden no longer value your liberty. This is a blue state. And this is a state that has been corrupted by the paradigm. Mohammedans are kind of popular in Minnesota. As a matter of fact, they're getting to be almost, you know, they're not like Dearborn, but they're getting there. We've already saw a case in the news where a Mohammedan police officer killed a woman. And I don't know if I because I don't follow the news, but I can tell you that the paradigm is ripe in Minnesota and these blue states. And we're going to get into another story. But the fact of the matter is, if you haven't heard, George Floyd, a black man who was stopped, and this is the G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. While the police investigated a counterfeit money claim in a convenience store, gasped for breath during the arrest on Monday, in which police officer Derek Coven, I think, kneeled on his neck for 8 minutes following the death. Riots have broken out in Minneapolis, and fire crews are responding to 30 intentional fires, burning throughout the Minneapolis area. Violence spread a few miles away to a Target store in St. Paul's Midway neighborhood, where police said 50 to 60 people rushed the store, attempted to loot it. Governor Tim Walz responded to the plea from the mayor of Minneapolis to call in the National Guard. See, who's the National Guard? The National Guard is an unconstitutional set of mercenaries. They may be people that live in that state, but they are not organized with the mentality of the militia. The National Guard, unfortunately, there are lots of good guys, but organizationally, it is ran as a thug organization. It's designed to operate that way. It is not designed to operate as the militia, as a true civil militia. Now, again, people look at the militia as a volunteer force. We've moved a long ways from 1787 to today. And there's no reason why you can't have levels of compensation for when these volunteers or people that are a part of the organized militia do not get compensated. It's not a full-time job, but they should be compensated for the time that they spend in what they're doing. And there should be truly a limit, because we're not supposed to have a standing army. And so you need to have another job. It's like being a volunteer fireman. And my point is that, you know, the National Guard is not, it's almost adding fuel to the flames. Anyway, Protests spread to other cities. In California, hundreds of people protesting Floyd's death blocked a Los Angeles freeway, denying the civil rights and constitutional rights of everybody that was stopped on that freeway. And they shattered windows of California highway patrol cruisers. So remember I said that I've got this, you know, riot response and so forth. I'm going to start sharing this. But we're going to get it out so that you can actually hear what and how things need to happen. But Memphis police blocked a main thoroughfare after a racially mixed group of protesters gathered outside the police precinct and, you know, started raising a ruckus. Riots are continuing to sweep the nation following the death of George Floyd while in police custody. Protesters in Denver swarmed a woman's car. She hit the man who was standing on the hood of the car. Shots were fired in the direction of the state capitol and protesters blocked a highway. Folks, when people are this mad and they're doing riotous living and, you know, they're not living, but they're doing riotous acts. You know, the if you want to protest, if you want to stand up for Mr. Floyd, then what you have to do is you have to go into your city hall. Everybody has to swarm inside your Capitol, get into their faces of the city council, get into everybody's faces, take signs, do whatever. That is the place where your civil rights extend to your First Amendment rights to protest and or actually to petition government for the addressing of grievances. Now, we're going to talk. I've been working with Bob Schultz with the We the People Foundation as well. He wants to actually take what we're doing with the grand juries and actually use his First Amendment petitioning to basically start a big petitioning plea around the United States demanding that every public servant be removed from office because, one, they have violated their oath, and, two, they are now accountable for to the people. And so he wants to use this. So we're going to actually talk to him on the show about this so that we can get there, if that makes sense. Anyway, if you look at Denver, Denver has one of the largest Black Lives Matter and Antifa movements in the nation. And so, folks, this is because look at Denver. Denver is a huge progressive city now. I mean, it was one of the first to make pot legal. I mean, they have flipped what you think. You know, it's almost like the communists and the anarchists are working together, because the outcome from anarchy is totalitarianism. And communism is totalitarianism. So when you have anarchists working with communists, which Antifa, Black Lives Matter, those types of groups are, then you have a recipe for real danger. I don't have a lot of time, but what I want to do is just basically give you a heads up. If you don't know, this is why what we're talking about with the common law grand jury, these petitions and everything else, you got to get active. Governors are now looking to extend the lockdown into July. Oregon has already come out and said we're going to go to July 6th. I believe California wants to go into August, despite the turnaround, the downturn in the COVID deaths and the way they've been. We're going to get into all of that. In my next episode, I will cover the need to know news, but I wanted to marry up this outburst of racism, you know, along with this whole dialogue and the 14th Amendment. I'm hoping and I'm praying, my friends, that you can help get this message out, help, you know, support the listener drive we're asking for, and two, get involved, get those first steps, take that stand. Because without you, we can't do it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.